"Sherlock Bloomin' Holmes," he bellowed, slamming his fist down on the side table. "Everywhere I look, they're talking about that charlatan."
"I see, sir," I replied, as meek as I could. My eyes tracked his hands as they swung this way and that, knowing that a cup, a pen, a piece of coal might quick as a flash get seized and hurled across the room at my head.
"If we had his cases, we'd be living in Belgravia, Barnett," he declared, his face so red I thought it might burst. "We'd have a permanent suite in the Savoy."
He dropped to his chair as if suddenly tuckered out. On the table next to his arm, I spied what had caused his temper. The Strand magazine, open at the latest of Dr. Watson's adventures. Fearing he'd noticed me looking, I turned my attention to the fire.
"I'll put the tea on," I said. "Do we have any appointments today?"
He nodded, gesturing in the air in a defeated manner. He'd shut his eyes.
"A lady's coming at midday."
"Very good, sir."
He rubbed his temples. "Get me some laudanum, Barnett, and hurry."
I took a jug of scent from his shelf and sprayed his head. He moaned and waved me away, wincing as if I were lancing a boil.
"I'm ill," he complained. "Tell her I'm indisposed. Tell her to come back tomorrow."
"William," I said, clearing away the plates and newspapers scattered across his table. "We haven't had a case for 5 weeks. I have rent to pay. I'll have to go to work on Sydney's cabs if I don't bring money home soon, and you know how I don't like horses."
"You're weak, Barnett," he groaned, slumping further in his chair.
"I'll clean the room, sir, and we'll see her at midday." He did not respond. At 12 o'clock sharp, Albert knocked on the door.
"A lady to see you," he said in his usual sorrowful fashion.
I followed him down the dark corridor to the pudding shop that fronted the governor's rooms. Standing at the counter was a young woman in a bonnet and a billowing skirt. She had the complexion of a rich woman, but her cuffs were frayed and brown, and the beauty of her almond face was corrupted by a chipped front tooth. She smiled a quick, unhappy smile, then followed me through to the governor's rooms. I could see him weaken the moment she walked in the door. He began to blink and jump to his feet and bowed his head low as he took her wilted hand.
"Madam."
He gestured to the best seat, clean and next to the window, so there was a little light thrown onto her handsome physique. Her eyes quickly took in the piles of old newspapers that lined the walls and were stacked in some places to the height of a man.
"What can I do for you?"
"It is my brother, Mr. Arrowwood," she said.
It was clear from her accent she was from the continent.
"He's disappeared. I was told you can find him."
"Are you French, mademoiselle?"
he asked, standing with his back to the coal fire.
"I am."
He glanced at me, his fleshy temples red and pulsing. This was not a good start. 2 years before, we'd been thrown into the clink in Dieppe when the local magistrate decided we were asking too many questions about his brother-in-law. 7 days of bread and cold broth had crushed all the admiration he had for the country right out of him, and to make it worse, our client had refused to pay us. The governor had held a prejudice against the French ever since.
"Mr. Arrowwood and me both have a great admiration for your race, miss," I said, before he had a chance to put her off.
He scowled at me, then asked,
"Where did you hear of me?"
"A friend gave me your name. You are an investigative agent, yes?"
"The best in London," I said, hoping a little praise would soothe him.
"Oh," she replied, "I thought Sherlock Holmes."
I could see the governor tense again.
"They say he is a genius," she continued. "The best in all the world."
"Perhaps you should consult him then, mademoiselle," snapped the governor.
"I cannot afford him."
"So I am second best."
"I mean no offence, sir," she replied, now noticing the edge to his voice.
"Let me tell you something, Miss...
Costure, Miss Caroline Costure."
"Appearances can be deceptive, Miss Costure. Holmes is famous because his assistant writes stories and sells them. He's a detective with a chronicler. But what about the cases we never hear about? The ones that do not get turned into stories for the public? What about the cases in which people are killed by his blundering mistakes?